For many of you, it may be too late for me to ask you the question, what profession would you like to choose? You said it's too late. I already have my profession. Or maybe I've already enrolled in university for this coming September, and you're asking me what profession I'm going to take up. But it's too late now. Maybe the camp should have been a little bit earlier than I could have decided on this. Right now, I'm going to study rocket engineering. Oh, that is wonderful. Rocket engineering. We're going to be going off somewhere to Mars or Venus or Neptune or somewhere. Voyager is getting close to Neptune, apparently. And we are making wonderful discoveries. They discovered another moon around Neptune or something. And the gas rings and so on. If you could choose a profession all over again, would you still choose the profession that you are in now? What determined your choice of profession? I wonder if we had a chance to talk person to person and I could ask you this question, I would like to hear what your answer is to why you are doing what you are doing. If you are studying economics, why are you studying economics? Sometimes what I find about the problem about the camp is that there's so little time to talk to people personally. And I'm interested in people individually, not just as a large number of people and you hardly get to know their names and you don't know anything about them, you don't know why they are doing what they're doing. But let's get back to this question of profession. You say, why are you talking about this? Because I want to see whether you can appreciate what is the most important function that you could perform in a lifetime. Is it that you can create a satellite, put on a powerful booster rocket that can be shot into outer space, that costs billions of dollars, and we finally discover that Neptune has a gas ring around it, like Saturn or some other planet? Maybe there is some value to this, and maybe I am not intelligent enough to understand what the value of this might be. Maybe some of you who are far more intelligent and know far more about rocket science and about satellites in outer space can tell me what is the significance of knowing that this or that planet has two or three moons revolving around it. I'm afraid I don't understand what the value of such knowledge is, but you can see how ignorant I am, and I ask your apologies if you are an astrophysicist and you look down upon such ignoramuses like me. It seems to me that there are more important things in life to do with billions of dollars than to discover gas rings around satellites somewhere out in space. And one of these things is the question of the formation of a human character. I wonder if there is something more important in life than the formation of a human character. Why do we have wars in this world? Why do people fight with one another? Why do husband and wife live in tension from day to day? Why is it that members of the same family cannot talk to one another? And we are busy and curious about how many moons there are that go around some planet in outer space. Is that supposed to be a distraction from the real problems we have to deal with in the world? Or is this genuine science, so-called? I wonder if there is something more important when we talk about science, which simply means knowledge. The word merely means knowledge. The knowledge of how to form a human character. into the kind of character that can produce a new world, a new society. Even if I have the choice, which I presume I did have, to be a rocket scientist, I wouldn't be interested in the subject, I'm sorry to say. I'm not in the least interested in rocket science, in rocketry or things of the kind. I am concerned about human beings and their character. Because only when a human being is changed can we have a world in which we can stop killing one another. Can you understand what's going on in Beirut? I listen to the news every day. I don't know why they're determined to wipe this city off the map, which they are doing right now. There is almost nothing left of Beirut. They've been pounding each other with artillery for years. And the whole beautiful city of Beirut, that once, do you know, was the financial capital in the Middle East, a prosperous Christian country among all the Arab countries, is today reduced to a heap of garbage. Why? What's it for? In the name of what? What is the purpose of this? Why are they doing this to one another? Can you understand? But in the meantime, we are spending $1 billion to discover whether there are three moons or two moons around a certain planet. I must say the logic of all this escapes me. I don't understand what are we doing. Is there a profession? Is there a calling higher in this world than the transformation of man? But when? From when does the transformation of a person begin? When should it start? It should start from the moment of his or her birth. And hence the importance of our subject, so-called parenting. If you were brought up in a home in which your parents were fighting each other from the day you can remember, how are you going to build a family in which you are able to talk with your wife and with your children? You have inherited a whole way of thinking. How? By watching your family and how they perform. And you pass this on to yourself and to your children, and your children are going to grow up fighting with their husbands or wives. And so it goes on, and this world is going to go on in this fashion. That's why I say, what is the most important task we have? What is the most important profession? You know, we go to school. Most of us have gone through primary school and middle school and university, and we've studied subjects and collected diplomas and degrees and all this kind of stuff. And nobody has ever taught us even how to live in this world, how to relate to our husband. And was that a subject in your school curriculum? When you did your advanced level, did you take a subject called how to get on with your wife or your husband? No, you don't deal with this kind of subjects. We study physics. And then after that, when we study another subject, I've already long ago forgotten most of the physics and chemistry. I don't say these things are useless, but they don't teach me how to relate to my children or child. They don't teach me how to relate to other people. They don't teach me how to become a mature person. And the schools don't seem to think that's a subject worth talking about. Parenting. Let me try to see if we can understand the mind of God. What did God have in his mind when he created us? When God created mankind, he had in mind that we should be walking on the surface of the moon, right? Well, maybe he did. But that surely was not the priority, because if I read Genesis correctly, I see something interesting. Let us just read two or three verses from Genesis chapter 1. Genesis is a very important book, especially the first few chapters. But we read only about 3 verses from Genesis chapter 1. We read from verse 26. Then God said, Genesis 1:26. Then God said, "Let us make man in our image, according to our likeness, and let them rule over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the sky, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." And God created man in his own image. In his own glory, the word image, and this is the camp's theme, show me your glory, show me your image. I have no time to develop for you from scripture that image and glory actually are synonyms in the Bible, Old Testament and New. And God created man in his own image. In the image of God he created him, made male and female he created them. And verse 28, and God blessed them, and God said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth." Fill the earth. Fill the earth with what? Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth with human beings. Fine. But what kind of human beings? Human beings who fight each other? Human beings who never stop quarreling with one another? Human beings who, as in Beirut, will bomb each other out of existence with their heavy guns? That's what God had in mind, did he? No. Notice the connection between these two verses. 27, God created man in his own beauty, his image, his glory. And then he said, now you multiply and fill the earth. Fill the earth what? With his beauty, with his glory, of course. And that's what we see? No, we don't see that. What we see is a world of trouble, a world of sadness. Those of you who have lived here, you live a long way away from Hong Kong. And those of us who live in Hong Kong live right on the borders of what has been happening in China. It's hard to understand human beings. So hard to understand. Every day I struggle with the problem of understanding. I saw the students, as you saw on TV, but there's a lot of difference when you are halfway around the world or you're right next door. And we in Hong Kong are right next door. We have many images left over from what we saw on the television screens, isn't it? In the month of June. And one of the scenes that remains in my mind may not be one of the scenes that remains in your mind. But one scene that stuck in my mind was the scene of 3 students kneeling down on the steps of the great hall of the people, so-called, of the people, remember. Sorry to say, the people count for nothing in China nowadays, but it's supposed to be called the Great Hall of the People. 3 students, did you see that scene? They knelt down and held up a petition in their hands. All they wanted was to present a request to the leaders. Nobody even took notice of their existence. Where is this possibility of even talking to these high and mighty leaders who regard the ordinary citizen as non-entities, as simply so much garbage, it would seem? God created man in his glory. You say you want to see the glory of God? God created you in his glory in the first place. Where are you looking? And he said, fill the earth. Fill the earth with the glory which I have created in you and you pass on to your children, parenting. But the problem is we can't pass on the glory. In fact, we are not even sure that we have the glory. And some people tell us that the glory has long since been lost. There's nothing left to pass on except killing and tension and political situations such as we see in China today, where just to protest against corruption could cause you to end up in jail. Let's talk about parenting. What should we do? What task is more important? You can see that what I'm trying to do in these first few moments of this message is to impress upon you the importance of our subject, that we are not sitting here today for the next 1 hour or so wasting our time talking about trivialities. I don't think there is a subject more important than the subject of parenting. Not rocket science, not economics, not religion, not nothing. We are talking about the most important subject, the formation of a human character. And it starts from the moment of birth. I didn't say it starts from 1 year old. I didn't say from 2 years old. It starts from the moment of birth. Now, let's be fair. You may be suffering the consequences of not having been brought up properly in the first place. And of course, we can't blame you for that. Your parents didn't know the Lord. My parents also didn't know the Lord. You know, some of us, sad to say, were regarded from the moment of our birth as nuisances. In fact, to put it less kindly, just look at the abortion rate today. Babies are nuisances to be gotten rid of before they get born. And those who do get born are still often treated as just so much nuisance to be tolerated. Now, if you are brought up in this way from the moment of your birth, it's not hard to see that your character is going to be affected right away, because a child, no matter how small, is sensitive. They may not be able to talk, they may not be able to understand deep things, but they have feeling. They feel the way you relate to them, even as a baby. A child may be 2 years old, maybe 1 year old, maybe 6 months old. Just watch the reaction. Just look at the child and make a very stern expression, and the child is going to burst into tears. He doesn't understand a word you say. They're frightened. They see your expression. You have communicated something by your facial expression. On the other hand, you smile. They may be even too young to smile back, but you already see a twinkle in their eye. Something is communicating. From that small, you can communicate. You don't communicate with words. You communicate almost as it were spirit to spirit, heart to heart. But you were both brought up in a non-Christian family, so was I. And if right from the moment of your birth onwards, you were regarded as just a nuisance, you already felt rejected. Your character is already affected from birth. Or there are other ways. We have very negative things in the Chinese family too. In, say, traditional Chinese family, a child may be regarded as a piece of private property, a kind of investment, an investment in which you expect to make a good percentage of return. I mean, who puts in investment and hopes to get only 3% when the inflation rate is 6%? I mean, you're going to lose out. You know? So if you have children, what you want is to make sure you put in 3% and you get 300% back. Children are investment. It comes from an agricultural society that thinks in this way. Better to have boys, they work harder in the field, you can till the field, and girls, they can cook a bit, and then there's a limit to what they can do in the field. And so what happens? You find that girls often feel more rejected. They feel more inferior in a Chinese society. and boys are supposed to be superior. And they pass on this possessiveness, this sense of people being property, people who are things, who are supposed to make a profit for the family. And so when I get old, what's the reason I have children? Well, the reason is that they're supposed to look after me. I don't have old age pension. Doesn't matter. I've got 3 children to look after me. And this mentality communicates itself to the child as well. And you can see all these wrong influences are affecting us in the society in which we grow up. I don't know what affects you. Only you know. How did your parents treat you? How did they look at you? Were you an investment? Maybe if you are a girl, a very poor investment, because they bring you up and somebody else marries the person away. You see, you give them away to somebody else. I spend all this time bringing you up and you belong to somebody else. That's no good. So the thing here is, I wonder, how do you feel? Let's start with parenting, talking about you. And everybody's situation is different. And often when I communicate with a person, I think to myself, why is the person like this? Is it because he or she was neglected from childhood? Taken advantage of? Treated as a piece of property? No, there's so much suffering. So much unnecessary suffering. But don't blame your parents. Please don't blame them, because they grew up with the same problem. Their parents treated them as property too. Maybe their parents also regarded them as a nuisance. Maybe their parents didn't like the way that their child turned out to be. They wanted somebody very handsome, and then they found somebody with a big nose, small mouth, big ears, and this kind of thing. You see, they were not satisfied with you. You always felt that they had something against you. How hard to grow up in this. You know, children can suffer. We make our children suffer because we felt we suffered, and now it's your turn to suffer. Parenting. You see how difficult a subject we are dealing with? What a complex subject. I wonder why God created man in this way. But can't there have been a simpler way in which man could have been created? Just created as a grown-up, just like Adam and Eve. You don't have to grow up. Then you don't need to bother with parenting. The way God created man made parenting necessary. Now, think right from the start. One of the things we hear so often, especially among Chinese people, is the parents are always saying how much they suffered for the children. I wonder how much the children had to suffer for the parents, but that part we don't have to talk about. It's only the parents suffer for the children. So all the time, it is this talk about suffering. I worked so hard to put you through education. Well, maybe it's true, but why do we have to talk about this? And then it says, you know, of course, the mother particularly, she had to suffer through the labor pangs, you know, the contractions, all this suffering. We owe so much to our parents for all they were supposed to suffer. And so we grow up being made to feel that we are debtors. We are always debtors. Not to say beggars, at least debtors. And so we go from one generation of debtors to another. We have a wonderful society in China. We are all debtors. You are indebted to your parents, they are indebted to their parents, and everybody is debtors. We have a whole society living on credit. You see how the mentality affects our thinking. Was that God's plan? I think not. I think God had a wonderful and beautiful plan. And the church's task is to bring this plan back into action. That's why we are talking about this subject today. To talk about the church simply as though we are all adults and children are not part of the church, or somehow some kind of a accidental appendix to the church, that we sometimes are a nuisance, making noise and distracting everybody, and they don't really belong to the church. And that is a pitiful way of looking at it. They must be brought up in the Lord from the moment they are born. The image of God is to be manifested already in the child. And it shows that the way you think will affect the way your child thinks. Parenting then has to do with the way you think. Let me make a sad confession. My grandfather was one of the earliest pastors in China from the province of Fujian. He gave up, talk about cost of being a Christian. He was one of the few Chinese people in a very poor society such as China was at the end of the last century and the beginning of this century. One of the few people who got a university education and could have made a good life for himself. He turned his back upon the world to become a pastor and lived in poverty as a result of this in the province of Fujian. But nobody taught him anything about parenting. And you know what? His children didn't grow up to know the Lord. He established the church in the province of Fujian, in the city of Quanzhou, which is where our ancestral family was. He established another church, a Hokkien-speaking church in Shanghai. And he could not win his children for the Lord because he knew nothing about parenting. What is the use if you can win all your friends and your neighbors to the Lord, but you can't win your children to the Lord? Can you live with that? So my uncles, even my own father, didn't know the Lord. And then I discovered that my grandfather was a pastor, but not his children. That is a disaster, isn't it? That's a tragedy. To preach the gospel to others and lose your own family in the process. Can you face it? Is this the way God intended it to be? We must learn how to parent. If you cannot win your children for the Lord, how can you witness to other people? Now let's try to look at this matter about parenting, and the time is very limited, and I have to keep it short and leave you with some time to ask questions at the end. As I said, in case I missed something that is important to you and which should be addressed. Bringing up children is a very, very difficult task because, as I've just said, we all start with a disadvantage. Most of us grew up in non-Christian homes. And those of us who grew up in Christian homes, such as in the case of my dear grandfather, who was greatly respected by his children, by the way, respected, but not enough to lead them to the Lord. My father and his brothers were very successful in the world, highly educated, but they did not know the Lord. You know, every time I think about my father, my heart is almost breaking within me. He was such a good man. I respected him so much. He was so successful in the world. As I mentioned elsewhere, when he did his PhD, he did it with such distinction that I think he is the only person I know of who was awarded 2 doctorates at the same time. I wonder if you have ever heard of anyone who received 2 doctorates at the same time. He worked for his PhD and was awarded a doctorate in literature for the excellence in which he wrote his thesis. I have never heard of it, so that I still have his doctoral diploma, which has PhD, D.Lit, 2 doctorates on one certificate. And he earned it at a very young age. But he had the world at his feet. He had his scholarship. He finished his master's degree at Harvard University within 1 year. having finished his first degree at Peking University, never studied English, and yet wrote his doctoral thesis in such beautiful English that even for me to read it is like reading a piece of literature. I don't know how he learned his English. But he had nothing. As I look at my dear father, he had nothing. Nothing that really mattered. Nothing that really counts. And I've shared with some of you that every time I pass through Hawaii, where my father is buried, and I look at his gravestone, my heart just weeps within me that he gained the whole world and seemed to have lost his own soul. How is my grandfather going to answer for this before God as a pastor? I also don't know. I say this as a confession, not as a criticism. That's why I use the word confession. I have no right to criticize my grandfather. But I wonder how my grandfather will stand before God and explain that his son gained the whole world. And perhaps, I dare not say for certain, it's not for me to judge, perhaps lost his own soul. Parenting. Would you rather study astrophysics after all? Would you like to get a PhD in economics or get 2 doctorates as my father did and then lose everything? What was accomplished by that? But for the grace of God, where would I be? I certainly didn't come to know the Lord through my father. So we can see the importance, the seriousness of this matter. I hope you can see it. And we have quite a lot of parents in the church. And we must learn how to bring up our children in the fear and the love of the Lord. But as I said, there is a distinct relationship between physical parenting and spiritual parenting. The principles, remarkably, are exactly the same. If you cannot do the one, you cannot do the other. That's why the Bible says, as a matter of fact, that anybody who cannot bring his children up in the Lord is not allowed to serve the Lord. He is not accepted into the ministry of the Lord. That's one of the requirements that you read about when Paul gave his instructions to Timothy and to Titus. He said that anyone who aspires to be a pastor in the church, one of the things you must check is, does he bring up his children in such a way that they love the Lord? If not, he may have 3 PhDs, he may have graduated from whatever seminaries in the world, he may be the most capable and nice guy in the world, but you don't accept him for the pastorate. He is out of it. Because anyone who does not know how to bring up his children also does not know how to bring up a person spiritually in the Lord. The two are inseparable. And that is why I said that what I'm talking about applies to everybody here. If you know how to win somebody for the Lord, if you know how to bring somebody up in the Lord, you will make a wonderful parent, let me assure you. If you know the right way to do it. If all you know is how to preach because you had some kind of training in preaching, that is not winning people for the Lord. That is not discipleship. In other words, parenting is discipleship. Now, if you are parents, consider yourself as having a great opportunity to learn how to disciple. Take it as a challenge. Your children are your disciples. And see if you can make them true disciples of the Lord. But if all you know is you go to, as Brother Mark said today, there are lots of trainings in our church and you go to CT, BT, IT, and whatever T at the end of it, and you are so skilled at preaching and exegesis and so on, and you're going to convert people with the eloquence of your tongue and the skill of your Bible training, that is not discipleship. What is discipleship? Now let's come to the spiritual part, because as I said, The spiritual part is simply the reflection of the physical side. The two are inseparable. Let me come quickly now to three stages. And with these three stages, as briefly as I can put it, we will finish and we'll come to our question time. The first of these I would like to read to you is from Galatians chapter 4 and verse 19. Parenting, let me stress again, is discipleship. Discipleship is parenting. Galatians 4:19. Paul is writing to the Galatian Christians and he says, "My little children, my children, with whom I am again in labor until Christ is formed in you." Now that is discipleship. I would like you to grasp this point very clearly. Discipleship is not preaching. Preaching is only one very small aspect of discipleship. Today you can go to a seminary and spend 3 or 4 years there studying theology and you don't know a single thing about discipleship. Nothing, whatever. Discipleship is where you see these words here. Where the person who is being discipled is receiving life. Not words, not talk, life. Now, if you are a parent, you know what we are talking about. How did you have children? You talk to one another, you see? And you talk and talk and talk and suddenly there was a child, right? I say, don't be ridiculous. Well, then how did you have a children? First of all, of course, there has to be, let's speak frankly about this. Creation and sex was made by God, and there is nothing sinful in any of this, and we don't have to be embarrassed in talking about these things. There has to be male and female. God created them. Remember, we read in Genesis chapter 1 just now. And in order for there to be a child, there has to be a commitment. In this church, we talk a great deal about commitment. Without commitment, there is no discipleship. It is not a question of believing or not believing. It is a question of commitment. It's not believing that Jesus came, that he died. All this we can believe. That isn't commitment. Even the devil believes that. That's no commitment. That's what James said. You believe in God, wonderful. The devil also believes in that. You believe that Jesus died for the sins of man, the devil also believes in that. You believe you can be forgiven, so does the devil believe you can be forgiven. He hopes you won't be forgiven, but he believes you can be forgiven, of course. What has to happen? There has to be commitment. Commitment. First, you have to be committed to God. There is no discipleship just because you go to a seminary and got a piece of paper called a diploma or a degree. You have to be totally committed to God, just as husband and wife are committed to one another. That's not all, of course. What else has to happen? There has to be a seed. Well, if you go to biology class, they call it a sperm, if you like. A seed. You know, the Bible uses that word, seed. Let's turn to 1 Peter. How are we born again? Through the seed. 1 Peter chapter 1. Let me read it very, very quickly as our time is fast running out on us. 1 Peter chapter 1 tells us how we are born again. And verse 23.